Let us turn to Habakkuk chapter 2. Habakkuk chapter 2. Verse 1. I will stand upon my watch and set myself upon the tower and will watch to see what he will say unto me and when I shall answer when I'm reproved. The Lord will bless us in the reading of his precious word. Please keep your Bible open. Please refer to it as I go over this study on Habakkuk. I need to cover two chapters today, chapters 2 and 3. I only covered chapter 1 in 2 weeks. Now I need to cover 2 chapters. So those of you who are taking down notes, may I suggest that you do not, because I shall be going quite fast and I shall be changing the slides quite fast too. You can always go to my website. The URL will be given you later on, and you can download the notes as well as the PowerPoint as well as what I'm saying now. So all the 3 files will be there on the website for you to download. So with this, do keep your eyes on the book of Habakkuk. Open it so that in my exposition of this book, you will know what I'm talking about, because I will have little time to refer to it, but I will give the summary of the text on it. And for once, those of you who have got your phones and can access the website, well, you can always access the website now, even if you want to. This is one time I give you permission, because the notes are all there. Right. With this, let us start. Very quickly, 2 weeks ago, I was here, and I talked about Habakkuk chapter 1, 1 to 4. And I gave us all an idea of what Habakkuk was facing. He was very, very troubled as he saw the conditions and circumstances around him. And he cried out, "O Lord, how long shall I cry? Why dost thou show me iniquity?" Everywhere around him, he saw all the sinful acts that his people were committing. And he was very, very sad. And it is not surprising that today we also see these things around us. And perhaps many of us, in fact, I know many Christians are very concerned and very worried, and they cried out, "How long is God going to take action?" Why? Even the very Christians themselves, they go on an unworthy trust of money. They cheat the money, they cheat with the money, and then they use the money for their own purposes and so on, and they are brought to court. It's a shame, a great shame. But then, why is God keeping silent? Where are you, God? And that was what Habakkuk was crying out. Why does not God not judge? Last week, we went on to Habakkuk chapter 1, verses 5 to 11. And we see God answering. All right, you complain, the law is paralyzed. You complain, the law is slack. You complain that the law is discriminatory. All right, I'm going to bring a people, and they will be very fast. They are a law to themselves. They will come, and they will attack you. And they will attack all the people and punish the people on my behalf. They are my tools and my instruments. They will be the ones I will use to punish these people you are complaining about. And so, Habakkuk, given that answer, now responded. "Art thou not from everlasting, O Lord? Why look thou upon them that deal treacherously?" Why are you bringing these Babylonians, the Chaldeans, to come and punish we, all of us here? We are more righteous than they, relatively speaking. although we do commit all the crimes and all the sinful acts against the law and so on and against you. But why are you bringing some people that are more treacherous to come and punish us? God, you are unfair. Very, very unfair. When God judges, why is God so unfair to bring in a people that is relatively more unrighteous than we are, to punish us who are relatively more righteous? This was Habakkuk chapter 1. I will stand upon my watch. I will watch to see what he will say unto me and what I shall answer when I'm reproved. And so Habakkuk went to the watchtower and he looked out to see what would happen. The Chaldeans will be coming from a far country, from the north. They will be coming. I will watch. I will see what you are going to do, God. Where are you, God? Chapter 1. So, when God judges, why does God judge in so unfair a manner? Habakkuk is all perplexed, perturbed, and most confused. He does not know how God can do that. When God judges, he is awesome. That will be today's study. When God judges, he will be awesome. Firstly, we deal with chapter 2, verses 2 to 20. God's appointed answer. God, why are you so unfair? Why do you bring a people that is so unrighteous to punish a people whom you have supposedly made righteous? Although now they have gone unrighteous. But why are you bringing an unrighteous people to punish these people? God's answer. Chapter 2, verses 2 to 20. Then we shall deal with, after Habakkuk had heard the answer, how he really praised God. And he gave God all the glory. God, you are awesome. Yes, I do not understand your ways. Yes, I do not understand you. I do not understand anything. But my faith, I will trust you that you have done all things right. And so, let's start. Chapter 2. Now, open your eyes and look, and open your Bible and look at what it says. Chapter 2, verses 2 to 20. And we shall read verse 2. Write down the vision. Habakkuk chapter 2, verses 2 to 3, I'm reading from the NIV. Then the Lord replied, write down the revelation and make it plain on tablets so that a herald may run with it. For the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end and will not prove false. Though it linger, wait for it, and it will certainly come and will not delay. All right, here is God's answer. Write down on the tablet of stone and let the herald that goes to the town to tell and to announce to the people what God wants to do. Write it out. It is a revelation. I am going to tell you what I'm going to do. It is not an explanation. Very often we would like God to give an explanation. Why are you doing this to me? Why this? Why me? And not other people. Why? God is not giving an explanation. God is giving a revelation. This I will do. This I'm going to do. You'll be prepared to receive it. And so God gave the revelation to Habakkuk, who was to write it down. Why? Because that revelation was not only for his time. It was for also another time, an end time, a time that was coming, that future. Not yet come, will come. It will not wait, it will not linger, but it will come. So that's God's answer. Now, what would that answer be? We shall see as we go on. Write down the vision. Wait for its fruition. The vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall come. Have faith. Have faith. Faith in God is not only enough. You must have faith in his timing. You see, it's easy to say, trust God. Yes, trust God. Have faith in him. The just shall live by faith. But on the other hand, it is also true. that when you have faith in him, you must wait for his timing. It does not mean that when he does not answer, he does not answer. It is not yet his time. Wait for his timing. And so you must wait. Your faith in God includes faith in his timing. Be wise and live by faith. That is the theme of Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 4. Do not live by wine. Be filled with the Spirit and not with wine. And not be drunk with wine. Right. Positively, this verse in chapter 2 and verse 4, the just shall live by faith, is quoted at least three times in the New Testament. In Romans chapter 1 and verse 17, it's quoted. Romans is a book that speaks on the justice of God. That because God is just, God must judge sin. And because men are unjust, men cannot stand the judgment of God. And because God is just and must punish sin, God sent his Son to be the propitiation for the unjust, so that the just died for the unjust. Just shall live by faith. If that man be prepared to believe that God had done all this for him through Jesus Christ, he shall live by faith. Quoted again in Galatians, we walk by faith and not by sight. After having been a Christian, we need to exercise faith in God. Trust him for the things that come into our lives. Trust him for the time when these things will come into our life. Don't pounce upon him when the time is not right. The just shall live by faith. We walk by faith and not by sight. And finally, in Hebrews 10:38, it is impossible for man to please God without faith. And all must have faith. And so the just shall live by faith is repeated in greater themes and expanded in Romans, in Galatians, and in Hebrews, with emphasis on the just in Romans shall live in Galatians by faith in Hebrews. The just shall live by faith. That does not mean that only we have to exercise faith in him, but we need to also be faithful to him, that when things are not coming our way, when things are not being fulfilled in our time, we must still be faithful. That is the meaning of by faith we shall live. Negatively, do not live by wine. The Babylonians do not have faith. They live by wine. Look at what happened. Daniel chapter 5 and verse 2, when Belshazzar had a banqueting feast in his palace, he was very, very sure that he was saved because it was on a high mountain. And he drank and he drank, and then God came down and said, "Mene, mene, tekel, ephasin." What does that mean? You are weak and you are found wanting. Yes, don't fool around with God. God has his own timing and God has his own ways of working. And we find that the enemies, the Medians, came along under a subterranean tunnel and conquered Babylon. And Babylon fell because the people were relishing themselves in wine. Therefore, chapter 2, God says now to Habakkuk, this is how I'm going to deal with these people whom I'm going to use to punish you. Now, because of time, I will not be able to read the passage text by text, but I'm giving you a summary and the gist of every text. Please look at the slide and then look at your Bible and see what it says so that you understand what it says. So, the Lord comes down with five woes in chapter 2. Five woes. Woe! 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 God is going to bring judgment upon the ones that he is using to judge the people of Judah. Right. Firstly, woe to the Babylonians. Chapter 2, verses 6 to 8. Look at 6 to 8. They were covetous and greedy. Now I shall explain to you the text one by one. Firstly, the figure. God uses a picture of what the Babylonians are when they attack his people Judah. They are like an unscrupulous bond broker, blending at exorbitant terms and piling up the nation's wealth. It's like the pawnbroker lending out money to people, asking for exorbitant sums as pledge. That's what it means there, as pledge, so that they can earn as much interest as possible. We don't talk of the alongs now. The alongs existed in the time of Habakkuk. They knew their work well. And the Babylonians were the alongs. They exorbited, they extracted a lot of interest and money. All right? So from what they got, what did they do? They would buy, they would sell, and they would make a lot of riches from their loans. Figure it out. This is how I'm going to look at chapter 2. First, the figure that is used. Then I'd like you to figure it out. Will not your debtors suddenly arise? You have been cheating the people who are poor. They come with their little property to give to you, and you give them so little in return, and later on when they want it back, they want to redeem it, you charge them high interest. Look, you think they will just be still like that? Take care. Will they not wake up and make you tremble one day? Chapter 2, verse 7. This is the fact, the forthright fact. Note the word because. For, in verses 8, 11, 14, and 17. Chapter 2, verse 8 and verse 11. Because of your violence, I will destroy you with violence. That's why judgment will come upon the Babylonians. Woe to you, because you bring violence to my people. I will see that violence will return to you. Chapter 2, verse 8, verse 11. Chapter 2, verse 14. These very victims that you show violence to, these very victims will rise. You think they will just lie still? They will rise. Chapter 2, verse 14. You think you are going to get all the glory from all your exploits? No. The glory of the God of God will extend far and wide. This is the reason why God is going to action against the Babylonians, who are the instruments of God to punish his people. The plumber, the plunderer, will be plundered by the remnant people. The destroyer will be destroyed. Woe to the Babylonians, chapter 2, verse 9 to 11. They murdered for gain, and they were haughty. The figure is just like an eagle taking up a prey from the earth, flying and soaring up into the sky, into the mountaintop, and there to hide whatever it has taken, the prey it has taken, up in the nest, high in the mountain, thinking that it is safe. That's what the Babylonians did. They stole, they exploited the people. They took their things. They took their possessions. They took their gold. They took away, they plundered the gold in the temple. They took away all the jewelry and all the riches of the temple away and into the mountaintop. Figure it out. Would such plans at the people's expense keep them safe from the predators? Does the eagle think that he's quite safe there? Because up in the mountain, nobody can attack it anymore, because he has all the possessions that he has stolen from the people down below. The fact, the man might be killed. Yes, Babylonians might have killed the Jews in Jerusalem. They might have killed the kings and the princes in Judah. They might have taken all the things in the temple. But they would cry out. These very victims would cry out, "Murder! Murder!" Woe to the Babylonians, chapter 2, verse 12 to verse 14, for their iniquity, their sin. They built their structures their buildings, their empire on blood. Verse chapter 2, verse 12. It is literally blood, future, plural, blood. A lot of blood will be shed. The blood of the Jews, the blood of the other people, they will be shed in order for them to gain the possession to build their huge palaces. Many of these Jews were martyred, all to build their palaces. The Hanging Gardens of Babylon, very famous, very beautiful, one of the wonders of the world. They were those buildings that were put up to glory, to glorify the king. Yes. Figure it out. Has not the Lord Almighty determined that the people's labor is only futile? Their work, their labor, in taking all the possession from the victims, do you think they will last? No. The hanging Babylons of today, we'll find out what will happen to them later on. The fact is this, the Babylonians' boast would be as fuel for the fire and their aggrandizement turn into ashes. One day, that those gardens, the famous gardens of Babylon, hanging gardens, one of the wonders of the world, will be just in ruins. This is what it is today, where the hanging gardens of Babylon was at that time. This is what it is, ruins. Rock and stones and desert sand, nothing more. The glory of Babylon was over. But the knowledge of God's glory will fill the whole earth in its fullness. The day will come when God will set up his millennial kingdom and God will establish his glory. Woe to the Babylonians because of their drunkenness and indignity. You know what they do? A person, they would give wine to a person so that the person becomes drunk. And the person becomes drunk, he becomes naked. And when he's naked, these people will look at him. Does it not remind you of Noah, who became so drunk and he was naked? And Ham had a look at him and did nothing about it? Well, that's what the Babylonians would be doing, making the people drunk. Yes, that was their weakness and their iniquity. Figure it out. Who would be ashamed and who would they get the glory at the end? They would not, that glory would not last. They would go into ruins. God's glory, chapter 2, verse 14, will last, and it will be throughout the whole world. The fact, chapter 2, verse 16 and verse 17, their violence had made victims of Lebanon's forests of cedar trees and the creatures therein. Lebanon, famous for its beautiful wood, the cedar trees, beautiful wood. Solomon used the cedar trees for his palaces. And the Babylonians did the same. And they cut down the beautiful trees of Lebanon. They were definitely not in the green project. They cut down all the forests. And they killed the creatures in the process of doing so. They had shed blood, robbed those on the land and cities of shelter, and shamed their victims, giving them to drink at first to enjoy themselves, and after that, being violent, causing them to be ashamed. One day, they would be overwhelmed and overcome with fear themselves. The day will come. Remember, I told you just now that this vision, this revelation, was not only for Habakkuk's days, but it was for a day of the end times, a time appointed, it will come to pass. And that is revealed for us in Revelation chapter 16 and 19. When God will give to Lebanon, to Babylon, that will arise again from the ruins. That will arise from the ruins. And God will give to Babylon, the harlot, a cup of wrath And God will bring judgment upon Babylon, and Babylon will be judged. Chapter 18, verses 2 and 3, Babylon will fail. You know what's happening now, today? Let us look at Babylon, what it was and what it is today. Look at the countries in ancient Babylon now. You have Turkey, you have Syria, you have Iraq, you have Jordan, you have Egypt, you have Saudi Arabia, you have Iran. These countries are now playing a very, very important roles in current affairs today. IS is growing up, and IS is seeking to kill the Jews. IS is seeking to kill the Christians. The Jews are God's people. The Christians are God's people. Do you think God will take it lying down? Do you think God will let it go? God will certainly give the revived Babylon Empire his cup of wrath. Take care. Watch now. Now is the time to watch what is happening in that country, in that empire. Babylon is about to rise again, and we need to pay attention to what is being developing, what is developing there, and to also see how God is dealing with it. All right, woe to the Babylonians for their idolatry. Chapter 2, verses 18 to 20. The figure, a worshipper of graven idols and molten images, was of no profit. Look at the graven image, the idols and so on. What can they do? They cannot see, they cannot hear, they cannot talk. And yet people are worshipping. And Babylon would be the source of this idolatrous worship. What is it? The source of the mother and child worship. Today, in many religions, there is the worship of the mother and child, including so-called Christianity, the mother and child. You have it in Babylonianism. You have it in Buddhism. You have it in many other religions. All this arose from Babylon. Idolatry. The fact is this. Consider the change and the contrast. Look at these idols. They cannot speak. They cannot see. They cannot hear. They are dumb. God seemingly sometimes seems to be silent, but he's not dumb. He's awaiting his time. When we cry out, he does not answer. He is waiting his time when he will implement his will. And so Habakkuk too must stand in humble silence and in hushed hope of God's intervention as the forthright acts of truth sank into his head and heart in this dirge of woes to prepare him for the worship to come. And so you find Habakkuk had been told now, revealed to him what God was going to do. Yes, God was going to bring the Babylonians to punish his people, Judah. But at the same time, the Babylonians, with a sinful life, will they go free? No, they also will be punished. Woe to them. Chapter 3. Wow, that is a tremendous chapter. That is a tremendous chapter. Poor Habakkuk. What could he answer? What could he reply in response to what he had heard God had revealed to him? All right. Chapter 1. He was in the valley. He was on the ground, like a deer on the ground. He could see all around him, flat, and he was perturbed. He was perplexed. God, why are you not answering my prayer? Why are these people who cheat, who discriminate against what is wrong, who what is right, who are corrupt, whose leaders become richer, and those who are subject become poorer, and leaders can get money into their banks and without getting into prison or being charged, and poor people, even they attain, they steal 100 ringgit, you go into prison. What is this going on? What is this going on? Lord, hear. That's what Habakkuk saw. And when God said that he will act, but he was acting in a way not expected by Habakkuk. Lord, you are unfair. You are unfair. I will go to the watchtower and I will look. I will go there. And then he heard God's answer. Chapter 2. After God's answer had come to him, wow, he would be like a hind on hind feet going up to the mountain. There, he would enjoy God. Let's see how he would enjoy God. When God judges, he's awesome. Part 3, chapter 3. Habakkuk's personal praise of awe and adoration. Chapter 3, look at it. It's a wonderful chapter. Don't miss it. Don't miss it. Habakkuk, he says there, a prophet's prayer. And it reads, Lord, I have heard the report about you, and I fear. O Lord, review your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. Lord, as he listened to what God had revealed to him, whoa, 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 whoa. The Babylonians will suffer, but in the cause, the Jews will also suffer. Lord, in your wrath, remember mercy. Remember mercy. That's his prayer. So, that was his prayer of Habakkuk. If you come across the word chicken noise, don't be worried, because it is a very unknown word. It may just mean a notation in music. Remember, I told you last week that Habakkuk was also not only a priest, but not only a prophet, but also a priest, leading the worship in the temple. And he was giving directions to the music director, Shigonoth, as well as Sila. It was this chapter 3, a prophet's petition, based on his knowledge of God's renown. God, you are what you are. He pleaded for revival and a renewal in his time. Today, many Christians in this country are asking Christians to come together to pray for renewal, to pray for revival, because Christians too are under attack at this time. And perhaps this may be our prayer too. He prayed for God to remember mercy in his wrath, that in his judgment of the violent people, he may show mercy, that people can be saved. You know, we see what is happening with all the violence in the IS-controlled states, where Christians are asked to renounce their religion. And if they refuse to do so, they are beheaded and they are crucified. And lately, we hear of Christians being put on the road, and a trailer rolled over them. Young people, children, women, and so on. God, in your wrath, because his wrath will come soon, it will be meted out to these people. Remember mercy. That through all this hardship, persecution, troubles, adversities, many will come to know the Lord. And today we receive mission news that there are a lot of people coming out who have been saved, who have turned to the Lord, that in spite of the fact persecution is facing them, they just turn to the Lord in Syria, and then they are running now over to as refugees to the European countries and so on. But whatever it is, pray that the Lord indwells will show mercy. So Habakkuk, Psalm of Praise. Let's consider very quickly verses 3 to 15. We don't have much time. First, we have God's appearance, God's coming. It mentions about God coming. God came from Teman, the Holy One from Mount Paran, Selah. His glory covered the heavens and his praise filled the earth. Now, he came from Teman. Teman would be to the southeast of Judah in Edom. From Paran, he would come. Paran would be a place to the west of the Red Sea. And so the Lord would appear from Paran, from Teman to Paran. Perhaps that would be a reference to his appearance in Mount Sinai. Whatever, the Lord would come. He would appear and would show his face. God's character, Habakkuk chapter 3, verse 3 to 7. His glory was glorious, covering the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. His splendor was like the sunrise, with his radiant power gradually revealed. Look at verse 3. There will be the horns coming out from the sun, as it were. There will be the rays. And there is hidden power in the sun, that while the rays shine forth to brighten the world around, there is tremendous power. The sun is a fireball, and there is power there. Again, we are reminded of the time in the past when plagues went before him, pestilence followed footsteps. That will be the time when God took Israel out of Egypt and the marvelous works that he performed in the course of it. When he stood, he shook the earth. When he looked, he made the nations tremble. Chapter 3 and verse 6. The ancient mountains crumbled and the age-old hills collapsed. His ways are eternal. Chapter 3, verse 6, second part. Even the ancient mountains, and we know recently, the ancient mountains, Mount Everest, shook. And Nepal, near below the mountain of the Mount of Everest, trembled and the earthquake shook the country. And as a result, Nepal suffered. And we know what happened because we also are now taking part in the relief of those who were victims of the earthquake in Nepal before and after. Verse 7, Cushan, Medan. Perhaps Cushan would be for Egypt, Medan, Canaan, and in between Egypt and Canaan, when Israel went through from Egypt to Canaan, the countries in between trembled, and they lived in tents, they huddled in fear because God was with his people and they were conquering the lands as they were about to enter. Now, verses 2 to 7 to tell us of what God did in the past. 8 to 15 gives us a series of thought questions. Questions posed to us to consider who God is. Chapter 3, Habakkuk, verse 8 to 15. Was the Lord angry with nature? Nature could not stand up to the power of the Lord. Look, the earth's surface was creased with rivers, bringing down floods. The mountains crumbled, collapsed, and curled up. Chapter 3, verse 10, bringing about earthquakes. The waters above and below were lifted up in tidal waves, bringing about tsunamis. The sun and moon stood stationary, reminding us of the time of Joshua, when Joshua asked God to hold the sun in its orbit. And so we see God working. Do we see God working in this way today? Is God angry with nature? No, God is not angry with nature. God is angry with man for spoiling nature. God is angry with man for damaging nature. And God is using nature to destroy man. Very quickly, just give you a glimpse. I have no time. 500,000 today, in the last 10 years, in the Asia-Pacific region, died through disasters. There were 1,625 disasters. 40% of disasters, 40% of the disasters worldwide in Asia-Pacific. People were killed, 500,000. 60% of deaths occurring in the world. People were affected, 1.4 billion, 80% of total population of the world were killed and were affected in the Asia-Pacific region. Damage was done to property, 523 billion lost, 45% of all damage. 8 of 10 worst incidents occurred in Asia-Pacific. Haiti earthquake, 2010, 250,000 died. Cyclone Nargis, Myanmar, 2008. Sichuan earthquake, China. Pakistan earthquake, 2005. Earthquake and tsunami in Japan, 2011. Nepal earthquake, recently, 2015. Typhoon Hainan, Philippines. Haiti cholera epidemic, 2010. North India floods. Indonesia quake, 2008. 3 days ago, earthquake in Pakistan and Afghanistan. The Taliban, who were causing a lot of terror to the people, now cry out for help. They have no relief. Winter is coming. The children have nowhere to stay. They have about, I'm not sure, 20 to 100 tents for the thousands of people who are without homes today. God is working in his own way, in his own time. Earthquakes and tsunamis kill nearly 200,000 people. Storms, 167,000 people. Extreme temperatures, 56,000. Floods, 43,000. Others, 74,000, and so on. Now, God is making use of nature. Man has despoiled nature. God is making of nature to punish his people, the people in the world. Right, let's come back. Chapter 3, verse 9, verse 11. Could the Babylonians match God's majestic might? Could their horses and chariots match the Lord's? Pharaohs could not. Could their bows, arrows, and spears match the accuracy of the Lord's weapons? No, they could not. Could the Babylonian march? Sorry. Could the Babylonians match God's march? His enemies would be thrashed as an ox crushed the grain. Chapter 3, verse 12. The wicked and their leader would be stripped from head to foot. Chapter 3, verse 13. They would be struck down even as their hordes struggled to scatter their enemies. Chapter 3, verse 14. He had performed this in Egypt. He would do so again in Babylon. And he would do so again in the coming months, in the coming years. I do not know when. During the great tribulation, great Babylon would taste of the cup of God's wrath. Chapter 3, verses 16 to 19. Habakkuk was amazed. He was awed by what he heard. And so, verse 16, his whole person reeled. His heart pounded. His lips quivered. His bones shattered. His legs trembled. But he would rest in God. And he would remain firm. He would wait for him to act. God acts in his own time. Have faith in God. have faith in God's timing. The fig tree might not blossom. There might be no fruit in the vines. The olive might not give out its oil. The fields might produce no food. There might be no flock in the fold or cattle in the shed. Though there would be absolute rain and abject famine, he would rejoice. He would rejoice. Can you rejoice in the circumstances you are in today? Can you rejoice whatever circumstances you may be in? Difficult, hard, very, very troublesome. Can you rejoice that God is there? God is in control, not only in your personal life, but also as a citizen of Malaysia, seeing what things are going on around us. Are you faithful to God, having faith in Him? Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will take my joy in the God of my salvation. God, the Lord, is my strength. God was his salvation, the source and supply of joy. God was his sovereign. It was no more the why, but the who was now in control. Can you rest in that? Not the why, the who is in control. God was his strength. He would be like the hind and walk in high places above the coming circumstances, up the mountains. God was his song. It would be played on string instruments for all to sing God's praise. This was the conclusion of Habakkuk. What a tremendous book. Conclusion. Habakkuk commends with a dilemma. God, you are silent. How can you be silent? Chapter 2. God, you are unfair. How can you use treacherous people to punish those of whom you have chosen out? Ah, God, you are wonderful. You are tremendous. I cannot understand. I am perplexed. You are profound. Lord, I can only bow. And I'll kneel and accept who you are and what you are. And I will trust you in faith. I will be faithful to you, whatever happens. At the end of this study, in whatever circumstances you may be, will you still have faith in God? Will you still be faithful to God? Give God all glory. Give God all glory. And today, we learn that all things must be subject to Him. All things that He might be all and in all. Right. For those of you who would like to download the notes, you can always refer to the website. Thank you.